welcome to the AT Pit Crew podcast. This high-energy show dives deep into the world of sports emergency care. Join us as we explore cutting-edge strategies, real-world experiences, and expert insights to help you step up your game in emergency care. We've got the tools, tips, and stories you need to be ready when seconds matter. It's time for the AT Pit Crew podcast. We have the green light in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the AT Pit Crew podcast. I'm Ray Castle, and welcome to the show. Today, we're excited to have Mike Hopper, who's head athletic trainer at Bishop Lynch High School in Dallas, Texas, with us. His focus today is he'll share his expertise on CPR training and AED implementation and accessibility in school settings. Let's get rolling. Hey, Mike, how you doing today?
Hey, Ray, great to have you. I appreciate being on.
Well, it's always good to have you. So just for the audience, a little bit of background, and I'm going to be real brief in this, and Mike, feel free to fill in any gaps. Just so you know, and this is in the show notes as well, Mike is a certified athletic trainer since 2010. He received his bachelor's degree in athletic training and pediatric sports medicine, master's degree in pediatric sports medicine at the University of South Florida, and is a tremendous advocate for CPR training and safety. The one thing I should have asked you, your undergraduate degree is from where?
Southeast Missouri State University.
Southeast, right above us a little bit.
SEMO,
yeah, that's it. Going through as well. So this is a great topic. This is one of these timely topics. I think, Mike, you would agree. This never gets old, and we're seeing this all the time and from a preparation standpoint. So we'll go ahead and get started, but for the audience, here's how this show rolls. So each question is like a race lap. We have 10 laps. And with Mike, and then we'll get to that final rapid fire lap. It's really quick fire questions. And then we head on over to Victory Lane to end the show. So you ready to get started, Mike?
Let's go.
Okay. So first off, you know, you and I, we talk a lot. And just so the audience knows, Mike and I talk all the time on different topics related to sports medicine or in health and safety. So one of the things I know many have seen this is you're a tremendous advocate and champion for making CPR and AED accessible in schools, and especially in the high school setting. So can you share with the audience your journey that really kind of guided you in that focus on CPR and AED training in school environments?
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. You know, I think a lot of people talk about when they talk about CPR, and it's one of those, well, we just have to do it, you know, and I was that way, right? When I was a student, again, at SEMO, CPR was just something we went through the motions. We had to do it, right? It was a requirement, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't important, right? It was just it's what we did. And when I came down to BL in 2014, started to change a little bit. We had 7 AEDs on campus at the time, and now we're up to 16. Not for any particular reason necessarily, but as I got more and more into social media, I met some people who have had children die from sudden cardiac arrest, and others from, you know, exertional heat stroke and those sorts of things, where they became more personal. And so I became a CPR instructor in 2015, and our school nurse and I have been teaching CPR here at BL for, you know, almost 10 years now. And as I've gotten more and more into it, it's become more and more important, because like I said, it became more personal as I actually met some people. It wasn't just, oh, an athlete died of sudden cardiac arrest, you know, whatever. It was this individual died of sudden cardiac arrest, and those became more personal for me. I mean, so that's kind of really where it's become that much more important for us. And then I know we'll talk about it later on, but we did have an incident February 2017 on our campus where we had a cardiac arrest event on our campus and successfully saved his life. He just completed a half marathon the other day. I saw on Facebook, you know, and so that's kind of that journey. And then we just keep chugging along with it.
Yeah. And we may get to it, part of this, or maybe come back again for another Evium show again, to talk about that response, that, you know, what that looks like on the back end side. And it gets, and it's a whole other, you know, we could easily unpackage that until the 10 different episodes easily, just on what that means from a response standpoint. So that preparation, it's easy. These are easy wins. I think, you know, that even from hands only CPR to being fully trained, it's just the activation process, you know, as a lead, sort of going off that. So, you know, many people, and I know you probably know we've talked about this, and I know I, you know, or many people talk about this with each other, is that we assume, many people assume that emergencies won't happen in a school setting until they do. So, and that's one of the, you know, it's one of the, I just want to pull your hair out at times. So why do you believe the, from a CPR training and AED availability are critical for schools, especially for athletic trainers? Like you work with you're one of three at your school or two. Mm-hmm. Or you describe that a little bit.
Yeah,
two plus. But how does that impact you, what you are able to do, but also when you're not there?
Yeah. So, you know, it won't happen to us until it does. Well, lightning also doesn't strike twice very often, right? So if you wait until it happens, you're too late. And some of the research that's out there, they talk about how, you know, realistically, it's estimated that 1 in 300 athletes has some sort of unknown heart condition that, unfortunately, the first symptom for it is when they hit the ground. The NFHS announced back in August, probably, that there's roughly 8 million student athletes competing in high school sports. If you do the math on that, that's 27,000 student athletes out there in America today participating in athletics that don't know they have a heart condition until it's too late. And the other thing, all the, you know, Parent Heart Watch and these different organizations that are out there estimate that sudden cardiac arrest happens once every 3 days in American schools. So to assume that it's not going to happen is insane, right? And one of the things we talk a lot about is, you know, state law mandates fire drills. You know, last time somebody died in a school fire, it's been a long time, okay? Schools mandate tornado drills, evacuation drills be fire drills. Schools mandate tornado drills. It's been 7 or 8 years since somebody's died in a school in a tornado. But sudden cardiac arrest happens once every 3 days, and we're not doing a good enough job preparing for that.
And I think to add on to that, we have to think the statistics are actually worse because you just don't have athletes at school. You have coaches, you have teachers, you have administrators, you have parents, you have spectators. If it's an event, you have referees. I mean, the statistics are pretty steep. They're not in your favor when you have a cardiac arrest. We know that. So you're starting at zero and you're trying to climb up just to get up to above 50, 60% to give them a chance to live. So going into this, so you know, talking about implementing these safety measures, and you talked about how you gave some excellent examples of like tornadoes and other types of fire and stuff like that. So with this, we, you know, most of those are just, hey, we're going to practice this drill versus AEDs. It requires you to buy something and to maintain them. So, right. And also then you have required training. Or you need to have training to use this. That's a logistical issue, a budgetary challenge. So what are some of the challenges you've encountered when you're going to your administration saying, we need CPR, we need implementation or an effective implementation plan in the school?
Yeah. So, like I said, since I got here in 2014, we've more than doubled the number of AEDs on campus, obviously. And now we do, I would say over 90% of our faculty and staff are trained in CPR on a regular basis every 2 years. But it certainly comes at a budgetary expense. And one of the things I think that a lot of people struggle with is you can't just buy the AED and forget about it. And that's what schools want to do. Well, I bought the unit. You mean I have to actually do something about a battery every 4 years? I have to actually check the pads, but I already bought the unit. Why do I need to do anything else, right? And so it's about understanding that. And, you know, I talk about that's money that I hope to waste, right? Because the moment you need it, it's not wasted. And, you know, one of those things for us, because I've been to other schools who don't maintain the AEDs the way that they should, is that when we travel with our teams as athletic trainers, we take an AED with us. So even if I know, hey, I'm going to such and such school and they have an AED, well, I'm taking ours with us because A, I don't always know where it's at, right? And B, I've been too many places where the AED is there, but the pads are expired by 6 months or 8 months, or you know, that battery's dead. Well, I'm going to solve this problem by taking my own so that I know everything I want to know about the AED if I need it.
So you have the plan A and plan B. and hope you don't get into plan C, which is you have nothing. And that's the ideal situation that you don't have to rely on because you already have it there and have backups just in case something does happen. So, you know, you earlier in the show, the very beginning of the show, you talked about how you all had a save at Bishop Lynch.
Yeah.
So if you wouldn't mind, I want to delve into that a little bit. And I'll just give a kind of quick synopsis of where the CPR and AED training made a significant difference in that situation. And we know that AED is CPR, but how that overall and who was involved and what was it from a game changer standpoint?
Yeah. So I set up the scenario. It was an alumni baseball game. And in fact, I was not even supposed to be there that day. I was actually in downtown at a continuing education event, but I decided to stop by on my way home because school was between my CE event and my apartment, the school was, and so I stopped by. I'd been there literally like 15 or 20 minutes.
You're going to get ice to go home, right? I guess. You're going to get ice for the day. You ran out of ice in your apartment or home.
Yeah, okay. And so I stopped by, and like I said, I was there about 15 or 20 minutes, and a 47-year-old man is running around the bases, comes running around third base. They said that he turned to the dugout where the alumni players were sitting, told them he was too old for this, blank, and hit the ground. And I was on the other side of the field, outside of the dugout, when people started calling my name. The first two people to him were an ICU nurse who was in the stands and a student nurse who was in her last semester of nursing school, both in the stands. And then one of our baseball coaches, who was a retired paramedic, and myself were next to him. I jumped over a 3-foot wall. Don't ask me how I did it. I sprinted across the field. So the lady started CPR immediately. You know, I yelled for the AED. One of the things people were really impressed with, I knew exactly where the AED was. And like I said, this wasn't a normal game setup, right? So I didn't have the AED on the golf cart with me or anything like I normally would. But there's an AED probably 60 or 70 yards, probably not even that far, behind the backstop of the baseball field. So they started CPR. One of our assistant principals who was in the stands, he went running for the AED. I met him about halfway there to take it back from him. Our baseball coach, one of our other coaches, he headed for the AED. When he saw the assistant principal going for the AED, he immediately turned and went to the gate and waited at the gate. And so the CPR was started in under a minute. The AED was applied in under 2 minutes. Probably about, I don't know, 5 or 6 rounds of CPR. I think each of the nurses had done CPR, and then the paramedic had done CPR. And while he was doing compressions is when the man woke up. The AED did not shock. It discovered a heart rhythm that didn't warrant shocking. He was conscious at about 6 minutes, and the fire engine and ambulance from Dallas Fire Rescue rolled in about 8 minutes. And so he was conscious when they got there.
That's a good timeline. I mean, that really fits in with what that looks like. You know, it's something you brought out as important is to note that, you know, because someone's in cardiac arrest, depending on the rhythm or the type of irregularity they have, it's very specific. It's not, doesn't have every type of condition that goes on. Or if the person is in asystole or no electrical activity, you put the pads on, it will not read anything on an automated defibrillator. It sits there. So you have to train for that and realize that that's just something, a scenario to train about what's going to happen when you know that they're unconscious, they don't have a pulse, they're not being the AED you're thinking may or may not work or whatever for the layperson, so they understand that situation. So that's a great story. I mean, that's the idea, is you have a conversion without having, obviously the patient went to the emergency room, but you give them a chance to live, and or there was a team effort, people all in and helping with that. So, and very efficient time frame. So
yeah, and there was question afterwards about the AED, and you know, There was question of whether it worked or not. But again, like you just said, you have to understand that it's not always going to shock somebody, and it's working whether it shocks or not, right? And so, but it was made very clear by one of our administrators how regularly we check these units, and that You know, that unit did everything that it should have done because we would have had an issue with it beforehand.
And you know, I've given presentations on this, and I know we talked about there's one slide that I created. It is, you know, the AED is a perfect, it's kind of a segue. The AED is the perfect athlete, but it's sitting on the bench. And if you don't put that AED on in play, then it never has a chance to score the winning shot, the winning goal. It never has a chance to do its job. So if you don't do it, you don't use it, you never know what's going to happen. So that's the one thing, it's having it available for that. So, you know, I want to shift gears a little bit. And I thank you for sharing that story. I think it's a wonderful story. And I know that patient's very grateful for everyone who gave him some extra time, so to speak. You know, focus on the athletic trainer role. It's constantly evolved. I've been doing this for 34 plus years now. And it's just, we constantly evolve over the years. So we see this as a vital role that athletic trainers play in student athlete safety. And it's beyond the ankle sprain, so to speak. So how do you see in your role, and you've been doing this for a while, for 10 plus years at Bishop Lynch and before then, how do you see the role of an athletic trainer expanding when it comes to emergency preparedness in school settings?
Yeah, you know, it's really critical for us as athletic trainers to work hand in hand with the school nurse, you know, and I know that sometimes there's the turf war and whatever else between the school nurse and the athletic trainer and the division, right? Of, well, the nurse deals with the academic stuff, we deal with the athletic stuff. Don't send us anything else. We only deal with athletes, and I think that that's a division that needs to go away. I've given a presentation on that, eliminating silos in student health. You know, we're really lucky here. We have a school nurse here that we get along with really well, and we work hand in hand with her. And then, you know, 2020 introduced COVID to us. Right? I think a lot of athletic trainers were able to demonstrate our value in finding other ways to work in healthcare, whether it's at the school setting. You know, again, we worked hand in hand with our school nurse, but also athletic trainers working in the hospital setting with the testing sites and doing all those other things. And so I think it's really important that as athletic trainers, especially at the high school level, to work closely with our school nurse and build those bridges. And you know, I sit on our crisis management team here on campus, so I'm involved in some of those higher level meetings as well. But, you know, being able to respond campus wide, right? That's one of the things that we do here. We're on that campus emergency team. So when something happens, we're alerted to that. And, you know, we might be in the training room right here and our phone goes off. One of us is going to stay put right here. Typically, Lindsay's going to stay put in the athletic training room, deal with whatever athletes are in here. And I'm going to grab my phone and I'm going to take off to whatever part of the building I'm needed at. And, you know, our school nurse and I, again, we work hand in hand really well with some of those things to put the student first. And that's really the priority.
I think you hit on the head. I think, you know, and I've worked in high schools and other settings as well. And, you know, identifying there are nurses are a tremendous resource. And while they may not step foot on the field, you know, some may do that, may not, but it's because of what their role is. They, and overall, the 360 view, they play a tremendous asset to the overall healthcare of the student athlete. And then vice versa, I know that they're saying the same thing. I think it goes hand in hand. So like you said, COVID, it made everybody work together and you try to figure those things out. And it is. It's all about trying to find the resources available, working together. We all want the same thing. It may look differently, but it's still trying to do the same thing in efficient healthcare for that. So, which now gets into, you know, this I think you already hit this, but I want to, you know, we think about schools that may not have a formal AED or CPR program in place. It can be overwhelming. And I think you talked about this, you know, how you've integrated with your other healthcare providers at school. So, what advice do you give schools, like a young athletic trainer, or it could be an experienced athletic trainer going to work into a high school for the first time? What was the first things you would do in getting, you know, starting the CPR and AED training program what's the first three steps you would do?
The first step is utilizing resources. You know, from an athletic training perspective, the NATA just did put out a new position statement on emergency action plan implementation and development in sports, which is also, I think, the document was written with sports in mind, but it doesn't have to stop at sports. Project Adam, which is an organization out of Wisconsin, is a great resource. And they actually have all of this written for you, where you can literally take their cardiac emergency action plan and utilize that to build your program. You fill in the dots, you know, you fill in the blanks. And they have everything that you need as far as how do you develop your emergency team? Because here's what we tell our teachers and our staff is if there's an emergency in a classroom, it's going to take 2 or 3 minutes or longer for the school nurse to get there or for one of the athletic trainers to get there. So in a seizure, in a cardiac arrest, in a whatever type of emergency you can think of, an anaphylactic shock, right? We train all of that on our campus. The big key is that the teacher does something. Do not wait for us to get there, right? And so developing an emergency team, more so than just your healthcare team, I think is really important. And looking at resources as to where you can find AEDs in your community. You know, the Rotary Club, the parents organizations. I'm not big on grants. I think that schools and leagues need to prioritize this and find the money for this. But I also understand that that's not always feasible. So where can you get some of those resources, I think, is also really important. But I also know that there's a much greater need than the resources have availability.
Yeah, I know that. Like, for some of the example, you don't want to rely on certain things, but like in Louisiana, we now have a law that's now, it's an AED law in schools that they require the schools to have AEDs that are functioning. And there's actually an audit process that's regulated through the Bureau of EMS. So if they don't have the AED in place, they didn't have one, they're going to get fined. And if they do a random audit, or if it's not functional, they do a random audit, they're going to get fined. After 2 or 3, or I'm not sure the total, I can't remember the specifics on it, that then goes up to the Attorney General's office. And so they have put some really strong measures in place to make sure that it's not just there, but they're putting that. So those are some things that are proactive just to make sure you're over, like, just like an emergency action plan for schools and things like that.
Yeah, so, unfortunately, there's only about 25 states, last I knew, that required AEDs in schools, which is insane to me. And so, you know, but some of them do have some legislation, like you mentioned in Louisiana. In the state of Texas, we're required to have one AED on campus. And what I tell people sometimes is following state law gets people killed. You know, that's bare minimum, right? There's also legislation, I don't know if you saw, there's legislation that just passed the Senate here in December, Hearts Act of 2024,
yes.
I believe is what it's
yes.
called, which is now going to the president for signature, that would make a federal law on requiring some of this CPR training and AEDs in public schools around the country, which I think is a great step.
Well, you know, it gets into the overall, like after, and I'm just going to take a side note on this, like the Hartford consensus, and you look at where it started with Sandy Hook. Unfortunately, those timely events in December 2012, then several months later, you had Boston Marathon, which they came in a couple of days before writing the next one. And then that summer, they wrote another one, then about public safety, but public utilization of resource, but using the public and lay response and lay preparedness. And I think this it easily flows within that, is having a resilient system or country. In case of a disaster, this is a critical part of it. You know, it's like just like having tourniquet training, and that CPR training is right there with it as well. So, you know, I want to switch gears a little bit with you, Mike. You know, you talked about how, you know, that one case you outlined, but about mental and emotional preparedness for situations. And there's that beforehand, then there's while you're doing it, and then afterwards. So we know that, you know, it has technical knowledge. You have to have mental readiness to perform. You know, people say, oh, I just performed well. No, you performed your level of training, not your expectation. That's kind of a phrase. You've probably seen that as well. And it holds true, because you never reach that expectation. You may get lucky, but it may be by chance, versus you're actually doing your training it becomes more automatic. So how do you prepare yourself and your team mentally and emotionally for potential emergency situations?
Yeah. Mentally, I walk through this process. Yeah, I've told people before, I'm at a point now, I think, in my career where I feel like I could almost do CPR in my sleep, right? Because I've done it, and I've done it, and I've walked through it. Yeah, and even last week, I'll give you an example. Last week, we were in high school mass, and so you had 1,000 kids in our gym, right? And one of the things running through my head is, what do you do if something were to happen in the gym, right? If a cardiac event happened in the gym right now, where's the AED at? Okay, and what, how do you manage a crowd? How do you do those sorts of things? And those are some of those technical things that you talk about, but also mentally preparing yourself for that. And we didn't have a true emergency in mass the other day. We did have a couple of kids get lightheaded and those sorts of things that required a response. And so, it's one of those, okay, now what's our next step? So I think that's how we prepare for that from my perspective is, always running through those scenarios on a regular basis. I consider part of that checking the AED and, checking our equipment to be part of that process, because now I know, I have the confidence that I have the equipment that I need and I know where that equipment is at.
Right. And also trained to be calm. And that's not easily with there. So with that as well. So audience, we're now on lap 8. We're getting ready to get on lap 8 right now. We got a couple more left, just kind of give you an idea of where we are. So, we have talked a lot about different facets of CPR and AED training. So we know that, AEDs are not only valuable tools, but they're essential beyond sports. So you've talked about this because you had the athlete, but how about the importance of having an AEDs accessible, not athletics, but for the school campus? What has that meant, or like the conversations that parent, the parents have, administrators have, just for general activities like for teacher safety or others coming to visit the school?
Yeah. So, and this goes back to December 2016, believe it or not, having a meeting. So like I said, we're having this discussion in 2016 in December. And we had the cardiac event in February of 17. So think about how close together that is. When we were talking about adding some new AEDs because we're in the, we just finished some construction on campus and we'd added square footage. And so it was time to add some more AEDs. And the statement was made that it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when it happens. Ray, you mentioned it earlier on about, it's not just the athletes, it's not just the students. It's the faculty. It's the people visiting campus on a daily basis. On our campus, you're looking at 12, 13, 1400 people on a daily basis walking around here. And again, it's not just athletics. It's all over. And so there's not a spot on our campus that you're further than 2 minutes away from an AED. And that's by design. You literally walk in the front door of our school and straight ahead is an AED. 15 steps in the front door, and it's labeled so that everybody who walks through our front door sees the AED. So, but that's how important that is.
Well, you have to understand, I think what people fail to realize, it's an athletic event. No, this is something that was made to me, a quote that I got after Boston Marathon in 13, this is not an athletic, and it was actually the day or a couple of days beforehand, the question came up to one of the lead personnel. It's like I heard this question, like, well, how do you prepare for, management this size of an event? And I'm thinking, I know what the answer is going to be, but it was to hear it and to hear what the person said, responds, and see the person's face afterwards was like, this is a mass participation or potential mass casualty incident, not an athletic event. It's a mass casualty, a potential mass casualty, it's an event with an athletic component. And if you take that approach, then it evolves. The situation, people could be walking down steps, they could fall, multiple people get hit. So no different than getting hit on the sideline, whatever. So yeah. Just something that you take that approach with that as we move forward. So, as we start to wrap this up, One is we haven't talked about like the future of AED and CPR and AED awareness in schools. So as we've seen a tremendous growth in the awareness of AED use and its effectiveness, like we saw with DeMar Hamlin, what changes or advancements do you hope to see, or you think you've seen the next, you know, couple of months or the next decade concerning CPR training and AED availability in schools?
Yeah, so, you know, we're right around that 2-year mark since DeMar Hamlin collapsed on the field. And, you know, that brought it home. That brought it home into millions of homes around the country and around the world. This is real, right? Like I said earlier, it's not just, oh, you know, somebody died from cardiac arrest. No, we know somebody now, right? And so the future, I think, is going to come from this Hearts Act of 2020, if you mentioned. And you're going to see a push for that, you know. I remember after DeMar Hamlin collapsed, we got asked here, what more do we need to do? And we were able to get some grant money to buy new CPR mannequins and things like that. And, you know, the technology that exists today in CPR equipment and AEDs is amazing. You know, you and I are both fans of the Avive units and all the technology that's coming out of that unit. But I heard somebody say it one time, but that's the best AED. The available one
you
AED.
Have, yeah, the one you have. And I tell people, there are some, like the technology you mentioned, that there, if you do your research, the ones that have, they're connected into 911, they'll read the rhythm, they give you out. So it makes it really accessible. Make the technology's improved for the most part. The EMS is notified and finding out which ones have that. Then you have, you know, the big, like the life packs, for example, the EMS you may see.
Yeah.
Or similar versions of those with those different. I see life pack. It's just what that unit does. Different brands of that, but they can read a strip. It's a semi-automated defibrillator. You know, they're going to push. You can push shock when needed versus it just running automatic. So, you know, really just you have to stay on top of it because it is, you know, from battery rechargeable battery AEDs. You know, they now have that available. Well, now you can USB-C. I can sit in my car and recharge it. So. Really not, you know, with that as well. So the last question we have really in is really about is not only just the technology, but it gets us into how does the audience stay informed on best practices for athletic training staff? You know, but also important for school nurses. It's really important to understand that. So what are some various resources related specific to the CPR and AED would you recommend them go to as for best practices?
Yeah, so I mentioned earlier, Project Atom is a great resource, Project Atom, Parent Heart Watch, your various local nonprofit organizations that do heart screenings, they do EKGs, those sorts of things. But then they also are involved in the CPR training world. You know, really the big two, American Heart Association, American Red Cross, are your big two for CPR. Third one is the Health and Safety Institute, I believe is the name, HSA or HSI. So those are some easy organizations to start with. But then, you know, again, talking about position statements, school nurses have their journal, those sorts of places. NFHS has done some stuff on EAPs and emergency, you know, preparedness, those sorts of things. And some of your state organizations, the state of Texas, the UIL and TAPS in Louisiana, the high school association there, you know, those types of places all also put out some of that information. And so those are all places to look for. And I think really, unless a school is going to develop their own CPR program, like for us, we do all of our training in-house, right? Yeah. The school nurse and I are both American Heart Association CPR instructors. So we do all of our training in-house. But if the school doesn't have a school nurse or doesn't have an athletic trainer, or those individuals for one reason or another don't want to become instructors, then I think it really becomes important for these schools to connect with a local training center through the American Heart Association or the American Red Cross or somebody like that to offer those trainings to their faculty and staff and to their students. And I think that's a big component that I think we miss. You know, going back to lap number 9, the future awareness, training our students how to do CPR. These students can do it. They're capable of learning CPR. In a lot of states, it's becoming a requirement for them to get CPR training in high school. you can teach CPR as little as 5 or 6 years old, right? They can retain that information. They may not be able to function and actually be successful, you know, physically, but they can retain those skills. And so I think that's going to be our biggest piece moving into the future, is training our youth in CPR.
Yeah, that's great. You know, you have, I would say just look at, you know, even to add to what you said, those, you know, a couple of things is adding like the Professional Medical Association, like the American College of Cardiology, American College of Sports Medicine, Journal of Emergency Medical Services. They came out with a, you know, similar like best practices this summer on emergency action planning. Those are all the one thing you're going to find, like American, you know, American Academy of Pediatrics, American Family, just examples. They're all going to say pretty much very similar processes. Have training, have equipment, have resources, have a plan in place. Those are all really, it's not very straightforward. So with that, so Mike, we're ready for the final lap, and I hope you are too. You ready?
Sure.
Okay. Five questions, five rapid fire. We're going to have some fun before we get out of here. So first one, favorite movie?
I'm in Texas. Remember the Titan.
Okay. Very good. So favorite musician?
Toby Keith.
Very good one. May you rest in peace. Favorite food?
Pulled pork.
Thought for a second you may say like gumbo or something, you know, creeping over to Louisiana. Yes. The barbecue over in Texas is good, you know. So what would you be doing if you weren't in your current career as an athletic trainer?
Well, I wanted to go into the military originally. So that probably would have been it.
Yep. I will say that, to divert from that question, it's very noble to do that. I know when I jokingly with my wife, like my, when I was growing up, I had two career pathways. One was to be an expert in kung fu, and the other one was just, it was to be a lawyer and sue everybody. So it was,
well, you know,
hey, like you could have cut that out, you know, but that's a, but yeah, military, you know, that's a, it's, doing that. So that's a, you know, you are doing that. You are fulfilling that. You're servicing others. You're,
I was in seventh grade when 9/11 happened, and, I wanted to go to the United States Military Academy at West Point. And actually had a congressional nomination to do that. But calculus and I didn't get along in high school. And for those that don't know, you need a lot of calculus background to go to the military academy.
Well, you're taking care of others who will go to the military and that help get them on their career path. So indirectly, yes. So and a shout out to all military personnel and their families for the sacrifice they do for our country. So last question. Fun fact about you that otherwise people may not know.
Fun fact about me that otherwise, so, you know, like you said, I want to go into the military, but I also at one time wanted to be a farmer. So that's something people look at me and go, you wanted to go into farming? A little different, especially now that I live in the city.
Yeah, well, I did live in a farm, grew up, raised cattle, so I know that very well. So we can talk about that and then some other stuff some other time as well. So anyway, Mike, thank you so much for the end of our show. Thank you for sharing your insights on CPR and AED training and preparedness. But before we wrap up, if you would give us, and we're in victory lane, one takeaway from today for our listeners.
Push hard, push fast. CPR, man, what I tell people is CPR is not hard to learn. It's hard to execute.
Well said. That's about as great as it gets for a lead out. So you may be starting to set the bar on some of these shows we have as well, because it's simple. It's it. So push hard, push fast, and don't forget to call 911 as well with that. So that's it for today's episode of the AT Pit Crew Podcast. Big thanks to Mike Hopper for joining us and sharing his invaluable insights. Be sure to like, subscribe, and share this episode with your community. And if you love what you heard, don't forget to leave a review. Until next time, we are out of here.
Thank you for joining us on the AT Pit Crew Podcast. We encourage you to like, subscribe, and join our community. For more information about this podcast show, visit www.actionmed.co/podcast. This show is a production of Action Medicine Consulting, LLC. The medical information provided within this program reflects the opinions of the hosts and guests and is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It should not be considered as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the guidance of your healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment.